We're back, day three of Gen Can't, Non-Con, Non-Playing. But we are playing games, so that's a silly name. In terms of all of that, it's Brant,
Brian,
and Larry.
And today was a little bit of a shorter day, kind of our last day. And, you know, when you're not in Indianapolis, you're not at the event, it's like the family stuff and the other things and the store and all that kind of stuff just kind of, you know, impedes on how much you could do. Not in a bad way, just in a way, right? So we played four relatively heavy games. I guess the fourth one was not heavy.
Time-consuming. Heavy slash time-consuming
might be a better thing. So we'll run through those here. So the first game we played was Ride the Rails. This is originally a Winsome game, republished by Capstone Games. First thing that stood out to me was just the production of the game. The cover is like this gorgeous Ian O'Toole art with... Oh, it looks almost like fall, right, in New England, like gorgeous reds and greens, and I don't know, right. It's awesome.
The side is white, though.
The side is white.
Yes.
And then the board was just really cool looking. I mean, I guess it's kind of stark in terms of hexagons, but it was that. So tell us about Ride the Rails. What'd you guys think? How does it play?
So you're definitely, like, it's a slow build. There isn't a lot going on at first, and then as the game goes on, it always sounds boring, doesn't it? You collect stocks in a railroad, and then you expand the railroads that you have stock in, right? So everyone's going to be doing, gain one stock every round and expand railroads every round, and then all of a sudden you're trying to make connections from city to city so people can travel those lines, and eventually, like, you know, based on how...
And all get clumped up in one spot.
Yeah, they actually leave once they've traveled.
They don't get killed.
They don't want to travel again. But it was definitely one of those ones where you see it kind of unwinding. Like, you know, it becomes a little more clear as the game goes on as to how you need to react and what you need to do. So...
Yeah, one of the things for me, you know, there's a few things. This might have been my favorite Winsome that I've played. First, when Brian said you get stock, you know, everybody gets stock at the beginning of the turn. What's interesting about that is stock is not a card stock like many other games or a piece of paper. It is one of the trains that you're using to lay track. So the more stock you buy in a company, the less trains they have on the board. So there is some strategy, and we saw that late game where one train might be left for a train, and it's like, oh, really no point in playing that, but if I don't play it, someone can pick that up as an extra stock, and if it's a good line, like orange was a good line, you know, things like that. To your point about the board, you know, hexagons, most train games, the boards look meh, and they're kind of confusing, or there's a lot... To your point, this board was gorgeous, even though it's just hexagons and it's just... But once you put those little stark white, you know, meeple passengers down in all the cities, the board looks really nice. Interesting, I'm questioning if the game plays better at four versus three, because what happens is, one thing we didn't say, is there's six different trains or seven different train colors, you know, companies. The beginning of the game, you can only purchase two and lay two. Then by turn two, you can get a third. By turn three, you can get a fourth. By turn five, a fifth, and then a sixth. So in a three-player game, Brant chose blue, Brian chose red. I rolled the dice and said, I'll take blue. So Brant and I got out to a big lead because blue was better than red because two of us were laying blue. I wonder in a four-player game if it would be two blue, two red, and it would be a little more equal there. Interesting decisions as far as going first, not going first, wanting people to go after you so you can, right, you know, because it's reverse order for choosing the stock. So if you're in first place, you choose stock first, which sounds good, but not always, because you could be the odd person out, because then after people see what you choose, they might go opposite or in a different direction. I think that happened the turn you went with the double blue, and then Brian and I were like, eh.
Right.
Right, and then, yeah, you know, so, because you choose the stock first, but you do not lay the track first. Right, so right. I loved it. I thought it was great. The game was relatively close at the end. I mean, really close, actually, considering we were,
you know, it was like 300 to 90 to 80. So
yeah,
I mean,
so that's, for that high of a score, it's pretty close percentage-wise within each other. Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I'm dying to play it again, but I really am curious to try it with four to see if there's a difference.
Nice. Yeah, no, I thought it was good. I thought the production was nice. I thought it was fun to play. It gets a little... I hate saying math heavy because the math isn't hard, just choice heavy. There's so many choices and options. And where do I want to be? Do I want to be ahead? Do I want to be behind? What do I want to do? I tanked a turn to try to stay behind, and I ended up in last place, but only by 10, 20 points. So it wasn't, you know, that big a deal. But I definitely really enjoyed it. I mean, it feels like that Winsome. It feels a little in the heavier, like the routes are important and you're moving along all these things. But
to your point, though, it is more mathy than your typical... I don't want to call it a lightweight train game, but your
right.
non-18XX type train game, which usually tries to be on that less mathy side.
Right. Or a Ticket to Ride that almost removes it. Like, there's just some right. numbers for
score. There were
points.
Definitely, both you and I had turns where it was like, we kind of have to almost math this out and decide which track so that, because you're giving other people points when you move a passenger because right. you share stocks or you're going over, you know, trains that they own. So it was fun, though. Yep. I liked it.
Next up, we played Endangered, which I think I reviewed on the last podcast, but now it's been a little while because I lost my recorder, so I can't remember what I reviewed.
I feel like Endangered played us. We didn't play Endangered.
Yeah, so we played the Otters, and the Otters I definitely think are harder than the Tigers. I've played both a few times, and the Otters seem tough with the oil moving them to shore, kind of coming after them and coming at a faster rate. It's twice the rate, and then it even gets tripled with certain cards. I still really like the game. I didn't like mind losing, but it did feel like halfway through it was like, I don't know, I think we're done. In fact, I think we picked up. No, you guys did end
no,
up
we,
losing.
No, we wound up
losing. When I stepped right. away.
But, yeah, it was punishing at that point.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't playing the game to try to win anymore. Every single person's turn was avoiding loss. Like,
right.
there never was a point where we were making any headway in an attempt to win the game, I felt like... Whereas the Tigers, I felt like we were always trying to figure out how to win. You know, we were pushing to win and balancing, not losing with what was on the board, which seemed, it just, the Tigers seemed a lot easier when we played. We also had a different mix of characters, which could help and not help and to some extent.
What did you think other than the level of difficulty, Brian, because this is your first time playing?
Yeah, no, I think it's tough trying to picture like what we could have done a ton differently, because I know you said you walked through it already a little bit, like on a different episode or whatnot, where it's like you've got the things that you're trying to accomplish, right? But like I guess part of it was kind of like there was potential for us to pull out some miraculous victory, right? But two of them were rolling a six on a D6, like basically like that was kind of needing to bank on
that, sure,
and then have. And we were still way behind on everything else. It was a fun, like I could see it being a fun puzzle, but it wasn't very forgiving in our game. So it made it like a little less appealing.
And with that rule change that we were, I don't know if we've always played or you've always played it wrong, but once you can't, if you can't put your,
I've always played that wrong. Yeah,
I wonder that to me increases the difficulty as well, because it's beneficial in my mind to be like, oh, Brian has a 1, 2, 3.
Right.
This one action is great. I'll put all three of my dice on there so I don't block any other spaces. Go ahead and do that. That's the one thing in this game that didn't happen last time is our dice rolls with no mitigation felt like we were – oh, there was a few turns where some of us were always trapped, like, oh, I could place one die and then go get money or cards because I can't place anywhere else. Or, oh, I have sixes. If I place anywhere else, I'm going to block it. Like – that seemed hard this
Which I
game.
Guess having more action spaces out would make sense in that time frame, right? So, yeah, I still really like Endangered. I still want to try the pandas.
there are pandas? well, they were already extinct. I thought this was a game about Endangered.
I mean, the cooperation feels really good to me. You know, I definitely think there could be an alpha gamer problem for people who don't like that. But I feel like we're all just sitting around talking about possibilities. And even just opening up the door of like, well, what if you had a turn where you're like, you're not going to like this, but what if I do this? And then you did it all and we're like, nope, undo it. We don't like it. But at least you're just putting it out on the table as opposed to just saying like, oh, that person said to do this, so we do it, right?
Yeah. No, I got to tell you, my favorite part of this game, I'm still going to say it, is that dice staying on the table instead of all clearing at the beginning of the turn is – it adds to the difficulty. It's cool, but it adds to the difficulty.
It's the best dice staying on the table, not clearing at the end of the turn game that you've played.
for sure.
All right, so then we played the monster game, because I've been wanting to play Underwater Cities again, and I've got the new Discoveries expansion, which I've really only kind of like gone through myself, not even a solo game, but just kind of playing through. And so we jumped in and we played, and we played. So Underwater Cities, we've gone through before. It's kind of a card worker placement game. It's kind of akin to Terraforming Mars. Oh, sorry. I did want to go back to Endangered to make sure I said that that is Grand Gamers Guild. So Underwater Cities is Rio Grande Games and Delicious Games. And the expansion adds, the first thing would just be production. It adds double layer boards. They're double sided, so everything rests nicely in there. And the original game had like 8 boards or 4 double sided boards. And this one has 8 double sided boards for 16 boards. So then it also has a way to speed up. So you skip the first round and you deal out tiles or you draft tiles to get starting locations and resources and things. So you can skip one round, which makes the game a tenth shorter, but in a game that could be 2 hours, you know, it's just relative. And then it adds in a bunch of cards into the decks, and then it just adds other features that you can do throughout the game. There are modules. So the one we played was you have all of your metropolises that you can connect to, and we were all dealt a certain number and had to pick what we wanted to place, which, again, is just a start setup. There's also one where you kind of, like, draft them as you go. So when you get to a metropolis, you can take one. So there's, like, a race to get to them. And then there was a mode, which probably is the most interesting one, but the boards that you get for that one aren't as interesting, where you actually, like, go deep-sea diving and explore, and you find artifacts, and you get to place them to get other bonuses and production bonuses. But really, for us, it was playing Underwater Cities again. What was I at? Like 10 plays?
Have you played it that many times?
Brian and I are now at 4 combined.
Yeah.
But we've made up ground on you. It was 10 to 2. Now it's 11 to 4.
Well, you guys
so
smoked me because I had like 90 points. You guys were in the 100s. So
if we just
clearly
play
my
again,
10 plays don't help.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not going to say there's some luck involved, but I think Brian and I just had the benefit of some end game victory cards that just, I mean, I had a very clear, I don't want to say dummy's guide to Underwater Cities. The tile I had for my bonus points at the end of the game was clearly laid out for what I should do. And then I had some cards that worked well for it. So I didn't, you know, like in some heavy games like Terraform and other games, you can kind of do everything and spread. In this game, I was very focused on just small amount of cities, upgrading the stuff, the buildings, and you know whatnot. But it's a great. I got to tell you though, when you were describing it, my head was spinning because I don't remember the amount of the iconography isn't hard, but when you just see it all, the iconography and the tokens and the spaces on the board, and wow, it was just like, what's going on here? But once a couple rounds, and what I like about a game like this, as heavy as it is and as long as it is, the end game is quicker than the beginning. When we get to that last round or two, you know what you need to do so that the decisions are quicker, where mid-game is where, I don't want to say it bogs down, but that's where you start doing that, oh, do I go there, right, there? Brian's on that space. Well, right? That kind of the last three rounds, that last era, whatever you want to call it, I thought was, we probably played the whole last era in 20 minutes, I feel like.
I mean, a lot of it's trying to figure out like how to do stuff efficiently too, right? Where it's like you're always kind of wanting to optimize, but I guess you're also jockeying for the different like the different actions, and you know, like you're gonna have to do things at a suboptimal pace, and it, like that efficiency can kind of be a tough thing, or that being inefficient can feel like it's a bad thing to do, but it might be the right option, especially for what you're trying to do. Where, and I guess that's kind of where there are a couple different puzzles that you kind of have to work out, like, okay, how do I pass this to get to what I want to do? You know, when, like, how do I get it before production hits? How do I get stuff to, like, to feed everything and do all that sort of stuff? And now what is most likely to be available for me to actually do that, too? So it was definitely good to, like, to get a couple rounds down and, you know, feel like we were in the swing of things, like, once we were finishing up the game, so.
Yeah, it was interesting because we played Great Western Trail. Does anybody know if that was yesterday or the day before?
No,
it was definitely yesterday because I played it.
Ah, there you go. And I was saying how, you know, they're both, these are both great games in my mind, like Euros, right? But the difference with Great Western Trail is like the pace, not literally how fast we're playing, but just the pace of building up everything feels faster in Great Western Trail because you're going from nothing into something and you're kind of just moving along and you're not as affected by other people. This one feels like a slow crawl. Like, I got to get this, but I need that space, but that person blocked it, so I'll go first so next turn I can take that space. But in the end, both games took us about the same amount of time, you know? This one was just over 2 hours, and Great Western Trail was just under 2 hours. But in actual time, they were there. So
I also, I mean, not that we've talked about it, but it looks pretty. I mean, not that that matters, but unlike games that are trying to look good, like a Photosynthesis or a Tang Garden, which it's a good game, but they're looking to look good. Underwater Cities, I don't know that they meant to, but when right. we were done and you look and you see the domes and the cubes and the I'm going to call them roads, tunnels.
had the green dome.
Right. Yeah, and that's the game. That was all that mattered, just getting the green dome. But it really did look nice. Like I think those new boards where, your point, where you don't usually want to spend the money to upgrade components or whatever, those boards just add so much. Nothing sliding off. They fit in nice. I thought that was
it would
looked
be
nice.
Tougher for me to buy the boards if they were the same boards, but when they're new boards and there's more of them, now it's like, okay, I'm adding to the game while upgrading my components. So that was good.
Were the original game's boards, were they
the front sides unique? Are like really similar.
Okay.
With no like special exciting things, and the back sides were all totally different and kind of exciting with the spend or gain.
But they were not indented. They were not the double
layer.
Right,
they didn't have
so
that.
You won't play with them.
But this one adds like...
No, I'm going to have... Now that I've played this, I only own Underwater Cities. I don't own the expansion. Now I have to get it.
Yeah, it's definitely... It's still up there. Like, I think... What year was that? That was like the year with like Root and all that stuff, maybe? And I... 17? This was like one of my favorite games. I think this was my favorite game. We did a top 10 at my house that year. And we didn't know if Underwater Cities counted. So I was saying, like, well, Underwater Cities would be my number one game if it's counting for this year, I remember. Right. But we had just played it at PAX, and then Brian had gotten a copy in, like, shipped from Europe or something. We were able to play, so. So it might say 2017.
It says 2018.
2018.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it was all that. But it just got recognized for, like, Spiel, or Kenner Spiel. It got, like, a nomination from 2019. Because it was in Germany by then. So it's just interesting in terms of order of all that stuff.
You know, a solid game.
And then last up, Peace in Our Time. Because we played Marvel Villainous, just kind of something to end on, that we picked up recently. And I was Ultron, and I managed to complete Ultron's objective and win the game. We talked about this the other day, but tell us about playing your characters and whatnot.
I mean, you already got the gist from Hellas, right? Or Hella, right? It's Hella. I don't know why. Did you guys walk through? I mean, basically, I was just trying to,
build up my tableau,
kill a lot of a lot of heroes that are enemies, and add a lot of my allies to my board, and just kind of go that way. Like, it was pretty straightforward with what cards I drew. Obviously, like, there are different things that I could have tried to have done to manipulate it, but it felt like I was just... I had a ton of allies that were pretty cheap to play, and they could kind of come right back. So it seemed like it was good. I know we were all kind of on the cusp of victory. Like, if you hadn't drawn the right card from the Fate deck, like, I would have won on my turn. Right. And Larry was close, too, if I hadn't done... I guess you probably could have won.
Yeah, I actually misread a card. But, yeah, I screwed up. But what I like about it is, and again, I think this game lends itself to 3, 4, 5 more than 2. Like, I feel like when we played 3, we were all in it. It was close. Whereas 2 players, I feel like you can get a little. But what I love about it, Thanos. Remember, we didn't play Thanos.
That's
we
right.
talked about how funny. Let's
That's
not.
Right.
Wait, why didn't you play Thanos?
Well, just because we were like, Brant and I were like, Thanos is the main villain. We'll play everybody but Thanos. But he was fun. He was just dynamic. There were so many different things going on with the whole. There's Infinity Stones in the center of the table. I have to get him to one of my opponent's sides of the board. Then I have to get one of my guys over there and steal it back. Or if you're holding it with a character, I have to kill that character, stay alive, and then come back with it.
Yeah.
So it was just he. Now I've played 3 of the 5. He was the most fun as far as you know, just doing different things and, you know, just not being like everyone else. Watching the game played, I still feel like Killmonger might be one of the harder ones to play. Hella seemed better today watching, you know, you play her and see what was happening. Because Brant played her terribly. No, but Thanos was a ton of fun. He was, right. And his theme made the most sense out of, I mean, Ultron's theme makes a ton of sense, though it's very straightforward. It's just, but Thanos just followed what we've all seen in the movies, right? The gauntlets aren't, the stones aren't in his possession. Someone else has them. Oh, let me go over there and get them and bring them back. So that was, yeah. That was
yeah, fun. I mean, I've always just said that Villainous is just like a guilty pleasure style game. It's just so fun. It's just basic, you know, in terms of what you just read through the cards. Now, basic, you gotta be careful because of all the reading you have to do and figuring out them all out is tricky. But it's just fun to play and work the way through. So I've just really enjoyed all that and whatnot. And it's just a great game for like ending something, you know, right. Like oh, let's play this to kind of end because it's just relaxing in terms of all that. Larry's looking at a box and pulling things out. Who knows what's going on?
I'm questioning something.
Oh, nice.
If you could have won.
No, thematically it doesn't make sense that my in Infinity Stones go to the villains. And I'm wondering if I misread it and they should have gone to the hero characters, which heroes are our enemies in this game.
Nice.
So you wouldn't have won.
All right, I am on a bit of a timer, so we're going to wrap up this last day in terms of all that. So thanks everybody for listening. Keep on lookout for more reviews and other things. These are kind of first impressions from games we got to play during all this. And whatnot. But thank you so much for joining us for our little discussion here of our 3 days of gaming, our gaming getaway. I am the Brant.
I'm Brian.
Larry.
All right. Until next time, we hope you step to the...